Thank you, Your Honor. Richard Doran, on behalf of the appellant insurers, may it please the court. It is well settled that tribal court jurisdiction is cabined by geography. This circuit has written that tribal jurisdiction is, of course, cabined by geography. The jurisdiction of tribal courts does not extend beyond tribal boundaries. And because of that, it is equally well settled that a prerequisite to tribal court jurisdiction over a non-member is actual conduct or activity by that non-member within the boundaries of the reservation.
Well, counsel, here, the claim relates to business losses, as I understand it, sustained by tribal businesses on tribal land. And that seems to me, because there's a consensual contractual relationship between the tribe and the insurers, to fit within the first Montana exception. What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, it is not the place of loss that is relevant to the determination of whether or not there is jurisdiction over the non-member. The law is clear that the court should look at the conduct of the non-member. Here, we had the member, if you will, the tribe, reach out beyond the boundaries of the reservation to enter into a commercial insurance arrangement through its broker with the insurers.
Well, that's a little disingenuous in that didn't the insurance company say, basically, we offer all tribe insurance, and here's what we offer to the tribes, and therefore then the tribe responded to that offer. It wasn't like the tribe was sitting there one day and said, gee, I think I can need a little insurance. There was active tribal promotion by the company, correct?
Your Honor, I don't think that's what the record reflects. What the record reflects is that there was, in fact, a tribal insurance program.
Correct.
That it was marketed by an entity called Tribal First, which is part of Alliant.
Tribal First.
That when the tribe reached out past the boundaries of its reservation to Brown & Brown, its insurance broker, mm-hmm. its insurance broker then went to an agent, then went to another insurance broker, Alliant. And Alliant, at that point, said there is this program for tribes.
Right.
And the tribe...
But it's advertised for tribes, and what it offers, as I understand it, is insurance that would cover tribal land.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay.
Was it promoted through Alliant for tribes? Yes. Was there conduct or activity by the insurers on the reservation as required under the first Montana exception? The answer is no. And we know that the type of activity or conduct under the first Montana exception, and I'm now quoting Plains Commerce, Montana and its progeny limit the application of this exception to non-member conduct inside the reservation that implicates the tribe's sovereign interests. Now, as the Supreme Court said in both Strait and Plains Commerce, Montana's list of cases fitting within the first exception indicates the type of activities the court had in mind. And then it goes through a series of cases where the court is permitted to tax conduct by non-members on the reservation. It's permitted to charge permit fees for activity on the reservation. And every Supreme Court case since Montana to apply that first exception has required non-member conduct actually occurring on the reservation. There was Marion, which held that a tribe could tax the removal of natural resources from tribal land. Kerr McGee stating that...
Could we stop just a second?
Yes, of course, Your Honor.
Which has been cited, of course, in these tribal cases apart from tax. But there's a part of Marion that's never been repudiated, I don't think, by the court, where they talk about the non-member, which would be the insurance company, enters tribal lands or conducts business with the tribe. So if the conducting of the business is sufficient under Marion's or clause, why would not the sale and offering of property insurance for tribal land fit that?
Your Honor, that language in Marion has never been applied by the Supreme Court or any other court. And in Atkinson Trading v. Shirley, 532 U.S. 645 at 653, the Supreme Court said that Marion was limited, quoting now, to transactions occurring on trust lands and significantly involving a tribe or its members. It goes on to then say, and an Indian tribe's sovereign power to tax reaches no further than tribal land. And in part in this analysis, it quotes that very language. No court has ever looked to the phrase that Your Honor just mentioned and said that that is an expansion of any sort of tribal jurisdiction.
Does the insurance policy at issue in this case contain a forum selection clause?
Your Honor, the insurance policy in this case...
Can you start with a yes or no?
Oh, certainly, Your Honor. No. What it says is that the insurers consent to appear before any court of jurisdiction that has competent jurisdiction. That, of course, doesn't answer the question here. It begs the question, is tribal court a court of competent jurisdiction? If the court were to look at the Stifel decision out of the Second Circuit, you can see that if there is a forum selection clause, that may accomplish nothing at all, because there you have a tribe proceeding in tribal court. And what the lesson to draw from that is that a forum selection provision may be an agreement between parties about where they should litigate, but it doesn't go to tribal court jurisdiction. That still stands alone. And if a tribe were to come in and say that the forum selection clause had been imposed on them, or they'd been fraudulently induced into entering into it, or anything else...
That's not the thrust of my question. My thrust of my question is the insurance company could have put a clause in the policy that required any dispute arising out of or in any way related to the coverage be tried in the U.S. District Court, etc.
That's right, Your Honor.
And they didn't.
That's right, Your Honor. And if had that language been in, it would not have resolved the question of whether a tribal court had jurisdiction over this matter. That question might still end up before this court, as it did in the Seventh Circuit in the Stifel matter. And in any event, Your Honor, the limitation that this court is here to resolve is contained in the policy, and that is that we will only appear in a court of competent jurisdiction.
Well, that basically, that doesn't
that
tell
includes
us
anything. A tribe. It can include a tribe.
The tribe says that's, we agree. doesn't get us anywhere, right?
That's what brings us here, Your Honor.
That's what brings us here.
Now, I will say, Your Honor, that in that same provision, it speaks in terms of the insurers identify the state insurance commissioner as the agent for service of process, and the insurers reserve the right to remove any matters to federal court. Two elements that show the expectation that the litigation would occur in courts outside of the tribal
court.
Does
that matter?
Yeah.
Pardon, Your Honor?
Why does that matter? That you thought maybe you wouldn't have to go to tribal court, even though you are insuring tribal commercial properties on tribal land.
Well, Your Honor, where we thought we would be does in fact go to whether or not we ever consented to be in tribal court, and that is a factor under Plains Commerce. And both in this circuit, by the way, as we're talking about the first exception, this circuit held in Knighton that the first exception to regulate non-member conduct on tribal lands independent of the authority to exclude exists if that conduct intrudes on a tribe's inherent sovereign power to preserve self-government or control internal relations.
This isn't a regulation per se. This isn't taxation or regulation.
I agree, Your Honor. It's not.
But the quotation you just gave us was about regulation and limits on regulation. I wonder, any cases of which you are aware in which an insurance company has insured tribal commercial properties on tribal land and have not specified a non-tribal court where tribal jurisdiction was denied?
Your Honor, I'm unaware of any case outside of a District of North Dakota case where that issue has been taken to through to final resolution. In the program we're dealing with here, for example, there are dozens of lawsuits, including some in state court here in Kings County, by Tulalip, in which these programs are being litigated and the rights under these in this contract dispute. Your Honor, what I would say is that the quote I gave you is not about regulation. That came under Knighton. And that was under Knighton, and in Knighton, there that was a case, as this court knows, where a former employee was being sued for embezzlement in tribal court. And what the court held, we looked very carefully at where that conduct took place, because she claimed she had moved outside of the reservation and could not, or no longer worked in the reservation, and therefore could not be sued by in tribal court. And the holding there was, when you embezzled the funds, you were working on tribal land within the tribal buildings. The physical location of the conduct of the non-member is central to the analysis.
Where is the physical location of insurance? Is it the physical location of the property insured? And
Your Honor.
Where is the location?
It is a financial instrument through which insurers have agreed, through a commercial agreement with its insured, to insure losses suffered by the insured property. But the insurer, there isn't some metaphysical presence of a non-member. That would mean, Your Honor, that any business done by any professional service, if an accountant is shipped records from a tribe, if a consultant is given information and then offers opinions that helps the tribe regulate their casino, and they turn out to be liable, that touches upon the land. That's business with the court and or with the tribe. And yet that cannot create tribal court jurisdiction, or it would expand beyond, it would eliminate the fundamental containment of tribal court jurisdiction.
You make a good point, I think, on that, but maybe a point that goes too far, because obviously in this digital age, the insurance company doesn't need to come onto the land to sell insurance like people used to do in the West years ago. I mean, people went door to door to sell insurance. You don't have to do that anymore. You have to just get on the internet and enter into a contract. So I hear your concern, and that is any possible business transaction could land somebody in tribal court. And I'm wondering if there isn't a limiting principle, because this isn't just somebody saying, the tribe saying, I'd like you to provide me with software consulting on my system, which is located on tribal land. It is actual physical tribal land that is the subject of the transaction. And isn't there a difference between that and then what you've just kind of spun out of all the possibilities?
Your Honor, I believe the limiting principle, and I do want to stop and reserve my remaining minute and a half for rebuttal, but I do believe the limiting proposition is, as the Supreme Court has stated, as this court has stated as recently as 2019, it is non-member physical conduct or activity on tribal land. That is the limitation, and that is the limiting principle. And this notion of long-distance business is not new. This ethereal notion of insurance has been around throughout the evolution of all of this case law, and this is the standard the Supreme Court and this circuit has set. Thank you.
Your bottom line is there has to be a physical presence of the insurance company.
A physical or conduct by the insurer or activities by the insurer here. To be real clear on what I mean, Your Honor, there's a commercial transaction out in the open marketplace. And yes, it was for a product made attractive to tribes. But now the tribes say, okay, now come into the tribal court because we reached out to you and purchased through our third-party broker this insurance, and now we have jurisdiction over you. And that cannot be the law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andrew Brantingham, and I'm here today on behalf of the Suquamish Indian Tribe to respectfully urge this court to affirm the judgment of the district court below, which confirmed appropriately the civil jurisdiction of the tribal court over the insurers. The district court's judgment was in accord with Supreme Court precedent, with circuit precedent, and also with the respect and dignity compelled by the tribe's status as a sovereign nation. The Supreme Court has stated many years ago, in fact, quote, tribal authority over the activities of non-Indians on reservation lands is an important part of tribal sovereignty, and went on to state that civil jurisdiction over such activities presumptively lies in the tribal courts unless affirmatively limited by a specific treaty provision or federal statute. And this court, in its recent decisions in Indian country dealing with jurisdiction, has reiterated that proposition, which comes from the case of Iowa Mutual Insurance Company versus LaPlante, wherein the United States Supreme Court recognized plausible grounds for tribal court jurisdiction over an insurance coverage dispute in which an off-reservation insurer entered into an insurance agreement to cover losses for tribal members on tribal property. This court followed LaPlante as controlling precedent in Allstate Insurance Company versus Stump to reach the same conclusion on materially identical facts, which are in all material respects nearly identical to the facts of this case.
So I want to ask you then about Allstate. I guess you cite that for this proposition that you do not, that a lack of physical presence doesn't preclude the tribal jurisdiction. But that hasn't been cited since Plains Commerce. So what do we make of that?
Nothing in Plains Commerce says that physical presence is a prerequisite, Your Honor. And as the court has obviously hit upon, the absolute crux of the argument here is physical presence. Is physical entry onto reservation lands a necessary prerequisite to tribal jurisdiction? Obviously, the insurers say yes. If they are wrong, this case is over. All of their arguments fall, and they are wrong. Why do I say
what
that?
What is the best case in your view? The question is physical entry necessary prerequisite to tribal jurisdiction? I think they would probably agree that's the crux.
Yeah.
They say, yep.
I think you say no,
and I want to know what cases where the court has not had physical entry where tribal jurisdiction was found.
Allstate is the best case, Your Honor, I think, on the facts, and it is on all fours, but for one single distinction that the insurers have clung to, which is it was an exhaustion case, and the court is familiar with that principle. But what's critical here is the insurers haven't identified any meaningful way in which the legal analysis should be any different here as between exhaustion versus the ultimate question of jurisdiction. Think about it this way. If the insurers were correct that physical entry is and always has been the necessary prerequisite to tribal jurisdiction, Allstate would have been decided the opposite way. The court in that case said, well, there clearly was no physical entry. The insurer in that case argued, you can't find jurisdiction because we didn't come on the reservation. And the court said, that doesn't really matter here, and there's at least colorable jurisdiction. There's no way the court could have reached that conclusion if, in fact, physical entry would have been required. It wouldn't have been colorable. There would have been no exhaustion. That's how the Philip Morris case came out, which Judge McKeown, I know you're familiar with. And that case was very carefully, the discussion focused on the fact that there only off-reservation and conduct was at issue. But in that case, there was discussion that Philip Morris had marketing contracts with on-reservation businesses. And the court essentially acknowledged that that would be enough for jurisdiction in that case. I want to come back to Allstate as well on the following point that the final paragraph of Allstate actually tells us the outcome of this case. In Allstate, the district court had affirmed tribal court jurisdiction outright and dismissed the federal action and didn't send it back for exhaustion. And the panel in Allstate said, quote, we declined to go so far. In other words, we're not going to just affirm outright. We're not going that far because it appears to us the dispute arises not from the party's contractual relationship, as the first Montana exception requires, but from alleged conduct governed by Montana statute. So the claim at issue in Allstate was a bad faith refusal to settle claim. There was this little question about sort of how does that fit in, but the court clearly says in that last paragraph, if this were just about the contract claim, just about the coverage claim, tribal jurisdiction is there. And that's the case you have in front of you today. If I may...
I want to ask about another case that's not in our circuit, Stiefel.
Yeah.
That's a bond case, correct?
It is. That's right.
Seems like there are some similarities between bonds and insurance. But there, the Seventh Circuit determined there wasn't jurisdiction.
That's right. And I was frankly sort of taken aback by counsel's suggestion that Stiefel stands for the proposition that forum selection clauses are sort of meaningless, because Stiefel is driven by forum selection clauses. In Stiefel, the Seventh Circuit followed a line of cases in the Seventh Circuit, unique to the Seventh Circuit. It stems from a case called Altheimer, wherein the court developed a sort of analysis that basically asks, looking at the totality of these documents and the parties' agreements, is this, I'm going to paraphrase, something to the effect of, and essentially a reservation affair. And in Stiefel, as in the Altheimer case, there was a whole raft of bond-related documents where the tribe consented and agreed to exclusive jurisdiction in state and federal court in Wisconsin. And that's what fundamentally drove the Seventh Circuit's analysis in Stiefel. Your honors were exactly right to ask, couldn't there just be a forum selection clause in these insurance agreements? The answer is, of course there could.
Your opposing counsel points out that there's provisions in the policy that service a process goes to the state commissioner of insurance. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
And that the insurance company would seek removal to or dispute resolution in federal court. Is that there?
I believe so. It says they can remove. They reserve their right to remove to federal court. Yes.
So in terms of anticipation of what the relationship would develop, there's no forum selection clause, but that's there right. Is this clause that says, here's who you serve with process, and we reserve the right to go to another court.
Sure, but where they can be served, how they can be served with process, I don't think dictates the jurisdiction of the tribal court in any way. There wouldn't need to be any forum selection clause. They don't need to consent to jurisdiction expressly in the agreement where the court has jurisdiction through their conduct, which is Plains Commerce Bank says that all the cases make clear that consent can be implied by conduct. Let's look at Your Honor.
Could you follow up, though, with the other half of that? I understand your argument clearly with respect to service of process, which is just kind of off to one side. But the reservation of the right to remove, how does that play into the analysis?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. Honestly, I mean, removal obviously would come into play. The tribe could have sued in state court. I suppose the tribe probably could have sued in federal court. I'm not sure, but none of that pushes you one way or the other on the tribal court's jurisdiction. Removal doesn't apply. They've followed the procedure to try to get out of tribal court, and they shouldn't. But I don't think removal really tells us one thing or another. The fact that they reserve a legal right expressly that always existed doesn't really mean anything, I don't think, in this context. I think it's extraordinarily important to point out, and Your Honors have hit on this, some of the undisputed facts at issue here, but you know, the insurers want to paint this as an off-reservation transaction. It's merely a legal instrument out there in the universe somehow. It's a very familiar concept in the law that a party can engage in conduct without being physically present in a particular jurisdiction. The first argument you heard today, the government was represented by an attorney who I think was in Washington, D.C. Was she engaged in conduct in this court? I believe she was. I think the court would have to say yes. In Allstate, there's a discussion of a personal jurisdiction case dealing with a case called, I'm going to get it close to right, Prairie La Portage, in which in Allstate, the insurer had challenged personal jurisdiction as well. And the court said that argument is foreclosed by our prior case, Prairie La Portage, where the court said a Canadian insurance company that had never set foot in the United States, or certainly not in the state of Montana, was subject to personal jurisdiction in Montana because it issued an insurance policy covering losses through travel in Montana. This is an incredibly familiar concept in the law that some of these insurers are domiciled in the UK. When they sell insurance in the United States, are they not engaged in conduct in the United States, in business conduct in the United States? Of course they are.
Well, they would say that's right. They probably wouldn't disagree with that, but then they would say, but that's not enough, because you don't have the physical presence. So we have Allstate as one case. What Supreme Court case do you think is the best foundation for saying that physical presence is not required?
I think the best foundation probably remains LaPlante, Your Honor, because, again, it's the same facts where it's recognizing that an insurer off the reservation insuring on reservation property is engaged in conduct there that is at least colorably subject to jurisdiction. I would also point the court to, I'm pivoting away from the Supreme Court here, but this court's cases.
Let's kind of stick with the Supreme Court for just a second.
Yeah.
Anything else in the Supreme Court we ought to be?
I do not have a Supreme Court case that affirms tribal jurisdiction over a non-member that did not physically enter the reservation. It so happens, of course, many of these arise in older times when grazing cows on the reservation was the economic activity. And so it's not entirely surprising to me that most of them deal with, indeed, business activity that is physically manifesting in some way. But there's no difference here, Your Honor, in the sense that the insurers have taken an insurance interest, a financial interest, directly in on-reservation property and businesses. The policies here even give them the contractual right to inspect and audit the property and the operations they are insuring. Why is that? It is because they have a direct financial interest in on-reservation business and economic activity, because they are agreeing that if something happens to that tribal property on tribal land, they will make good on it, they will pay for it. And that is inescapably conduct on tribal land.
So where do you draw the line? That's a real concern, and particularly with e-commerce and internet business. So how do you draw the line? What's the difference between the situation you just laid out and somebody procuring some other kind of inchoate service? What's the difference?
The best line already exists in your case law, Your Honor, and it is that there must be we've used a couple of phrases from Smith, from the Grand Canyon Skywalk case, there must be a, quote, direct connection to tribal lands. That's what Smith says. Grand Canyon Skywalk says a relationship that centers on tribal lands. And so, again, you couldn't get a relationship that more clearly centered on tribal lands than insuring tribal lands here. But that is built in. So, for example, if a tribe...
And tribal lands are understood to be physical lands, correct?
I think so. I mean, certainly that it is no question the tribe's lands are a geographic jurisdiction. The issue here, the sort of metaphysical issue, becomes what does conduct on the lands mean? And the insurers say conduct, conduct, conduct. I even heard counsel say the case law says physical conduct on the land. It doesn't. The physical part doesn't exist in the case law. No case has ever equated conduct on the land with physical entry. None. And the Supreme Court in Plains Commerce Bank, number one, that case, as this court has correctly glossed it, was not about tribal lands. It was about non-Indian-owned fee land.
Right.
And the court in that case even said, we're not even talking about conduct, because it was about sale of non-Indian-owned fee land. And the majority in that case says, that's not conduct. Sale is not conduct. Justice Ginsburg in dissent says, dictionary seems to say sale is conduct, and some people might think so, but the court says this isn't even it. So and there's an interesting footnote where the majority responds to Justice Ginsburg and says, well, we've got to be talking about conduct in the relevant sense within this case law. It's not physical. That has never appeared in the case law. What we're dealing with, and as the district court recognized, is a contractual relationship that is business activity. It is akin to the Grand Canyon Skywalk case, where a non-member, through its, as the court said, intangible contract interest in an on-reservation business enterprise, was subject to the tribe's right to exclude. That is a geographically sort of historically centered right to exclude. And the court there said, this court said, sure, it's an intangible contractual interest, but it's every bit as an intrusion into the tribe's lands, because obviously it doesn't need to be physical. It can happen through a legal arrangement like a contract.
If an auto insurance company offers, promotes, sells insurance policies to tribal members, and the insured is has a one-car accident on tribal land, has the insurance company agreed to consent to tribal jurisdiction?
That, I believe, is what Allstate would compel. I think that's right, Your Honor. And if I may just finish answering the question.
Does Strait enter into that?
I don't think Strait enters into it, Your Honor. I mean, fundamentally, what Strait says is adjudicatory authority does not exceed regulatory authority. I don't think Strait certainly doesn't overrule LaPlante. It doesn't overrule any of this court's decisions that I've been talking about. It sort of takes the doctrine off in a different direction, but it certainly doesn't say physical entry.
I wasn't trying to hijack the question. So go back to, I just wanted
to answer your question, Judge, and then I'll stop. I think, again, consent can be expressed or implied, and you've looked, I mean, in Allstate and in other cases, we've cited the Turtle Mountain District Court case out of, I think it's North Dakota. It's the best one I've got. I wish it were a federal appellate case, but that is on point. And the court looks to facts there showing the insurer knew that it was voluntarily insuring tribal members and tribal property on tribal lands. And the same is true here, Your Honor. The notion that the insurers here didn't know what they were doing is untenable. These are sophisticated parties with the best lawyers on the planet. They know exactly what they were doing. They did it intentionally, consensually, and they agreed to engage in conduct on tribal land.
One last question. Does it matter that it's the tribe versus a tribal member?
I think that the fact that it's a tribe here, and to be clear, it's the tribe itself. The tribal council is literally a named insured on these policies. It's also the tribe's economic development arm, so it's a tribal entity like a tribal member. I would say the fact that the tribe itself is a party here only heightens the reality that the tribe's sovereign interest is at its maximum, at its zenith in this case, because it is a sovereign that is trying to decide a simple contract dispute in its own court where the sovereign itself is a party. The tribe's sovereign interests certainly justify jurisdiction here, and we urge the court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your
Mr.
Honor,
Dorn.
May it please the court, very briefly, Iowa Mutual was taken on by the Supreme Court twice after it was issued to address exactly the broad statement that counsel brought up. And Strait at 520 U.S. at 453, they say we did not intend to expand any doctrine that tribal jurisdiction remains very narrow. In Nevada v. Hicks, 533 U.S. at 380 to 81, they say we confirmed in Strait what we had indicated about Iowa Mutual, that it does nothing beyond what Montana does. And what Montana says is there is no jurisdiction over non-tribal members unless you fit within one of the exceptions. Now, Stifel is a highly relevant case. The jurisdiction selection clause there only was considered by the court in the context of exhaustion. It then went on and did a robust jurisdictional analysis based on the financial instruments there. If this court were to find that based on the financial instrument here, there is jurisdiction, we would have a circuit split. And I would urge this court not to create that, particularly when that split would result from the elimination of any tangible limitation on tribal court jurisdiction and there any need for actual conduct or activity on the reservation would be eliminated. Last quick point. One of the last cases counsel cited was Grand Canyon. I think Grand Canyon is a great case to look at because, first of all, that case, while it talked about an intangible property interest, it was talking about an intangible property interest in operating a tourist attraction deep within the reservation where the land is so beautiful, and that's the inherent value in that management contract. The Allstate case, like Grand Canyon, by the way, was an exhaustion case. And the Supreme Court told us in Strait that exhaustion is a prudential rule in deference to the capacity of tribal courts to explain to the parties the precise basis for accepting or rejecting jurisdiction. That's 520 U.S. at 450. The point being, in an exhaustion case, the court looks to see if there are any factors that the tribal court should assess before the district and circuit court step in. The deference is to let the tribal court look at the variables first. So when all counsel can point to is Allstate and Iowa Mutual, which deals exclusively with exhaustion, what he's telling you is he has no case in which the Ninth Circuit or the Supreme Court has found jurisdiction under the facts here. We ask that the court reverse the district court and find that the tribal court had not have jurisdiction here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank both counsel for your argument, but also for the briefing. Very helpful and very complete. The case of Lexington Insurance Company versus Smith is submitted, and we're adjourned for the morning.